Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Katie, you know, this past weekend was championship weekend for college football.
I am aware.
Are you aware of that?
I am aware.
And it's always championship weekend for you in your quest for your podcast to interview The Rock. How's that going?
It's going well, actually. I have, we had a guest in studio 2 weeks ago, and through him, I was able to make, he's the closest connection I now have ever had to The Rock. So we're in December, and my goal is to get him by before the year is out.
That's
so
right. And you've done how many interviews with athletes?
With people. This week I'll release episode 139, but it's really episode 138 because I skipped episode 100 for The Rock.
All right. Keep moving forward.
Yes, exactly.
That is the name of the podcast.
Yes, it is. It is.
Well, speaking of champions, we've got a lot in the room today.
We definitely do.
So we're going to kick off the show with John Grant. He is with ESPN, but he is also the executive director of the Air Force Reserve Celebration Bowl. Welcome, John.
Good morning.
So tell us about the Celebration Bowl. What are you celebrating?
Well, you name it, we're celebrating it. But mainly we're celebrating football. We're celebrating the pageantry, the history, the legacy around college football, and certainly championship, because this is a championship game. The champion of the Mideastern Athletic Conference takes on the champion from the Southwestern Athletic Conference in this season-opening bowl game here in Atlanta.
This is the first bowl game in Atlanta?
It's the first game of the season.
Oh, for all the bowl games?
Yes, this will be our fourth year. Mm-hmm. We launched the inaugural game in 2015. And so this year, fortunately enough, the two teams that are matching up this year, North Carolina A&T versus Alcorn State University, also played in our inaugural game. So this is a big rematch for these two.
Redemption.
Redemption. And they're playing for a national championship for historically black colleges and universities.
Now, how'd you get involved with this bowl and with ESPN?
Well, prior to this life, I was the chief executive of 100 Black Men of Atlanta, and we ran a college football game for many years, and I oversaw that game. It was called the Atlanta Classic. We played it at the Georgia Dome, and when ESPN was looking to launch this bowl game in Atlanta, calls kept coming around to me, and we ended up in a conversation with ESPN, literally initially about merging the game that we had with what they were looking to do, because obviously when you're in the bowl space, it's much bigger, and you can't get with a brand much bigger in sports than ESPN.
Sure.
And along the way, they said, well, why don't you come with us? And after some deliberation, and some divine intervention, here I am.
Now, because you had been with the 100 Black Men for quite some time, right?
14 years as the chief executive, yes.
And you have grown that organization and its impact.
Yes. Well, it had a lot of fun there. I mean, really enjoyed that work, being involved in enhancing lives, creating opportunities for young people that did not normally have it. And we worked very hard in creating first-generation college students, which is what we focused on. But this is just a much bigger opportunity. I'm connected now into 25 universities. The impact that we're having with our bowl game being broadcast live on ABC, and because of the Air Force Reserve, we're also on the Armed Forces Network, which makes us the only bowl game out of 40 that's broadcast in 142 countries around the world. So it's just been exciting and very rewarding. I love building things. Mm-hmm. And so the opportunity to get this off the ground, create a foundation for it, and then to put a plan together to launch it forward just fits right into what I love to do.
Now, can you talk about your career in the sense of this kind of social entrepreneurness that you're doing, the impact that you're having, and that's an important component of all of your work, it sounds like. And then why'd you choose that path?
I love that definition, social entrepreneurship, because that is, from my perspective, really what this is about. The schools that we're involved within these two conferences have never really had a bowl game at this level to be a part of the Capital One Bowl season, and to be on a you know, network television. There are four games that's on network television. All the rest are on ESPN cable.
Right.
So to be one of four gives us an additional 20 million homes that we have access to. To put those schools on the stage that they were on, and then to see the impact of being involved in college sport in the bowl space. For instance, North Carolina A&T, which is a two-time champion of the Celebration Bowl, this is their third return. They're kind of like the Alabama of when you think about college football. So in our fourth year, this is their third return. But this year, for the fall semester, they have become the largest HBCU in the country. Second, they had over 17,000 applications for 1,500 positions.
Wow.
And we've seen that for every school that's participated in this game. The exposure they receive really drives student recruiting. And that really is what the bowl business is about. Mm-hmm. The exposure that the schools receive participating on these bowl platforms is a driver around student recruiting.
So that's a fact. That's not a theory, right? So that's part of the attraction of the so many bowls and so many colleges vying for them.
That's true. An economist did a study on the return on investment of sport to university. One of the schools that they studied, if you remember Boston College and the Flutie Hail Mary.
Right.
And then they also did one on Alabama, but I'll talk about the Alabama study because it's more recent. Before Nick Saban came to Alabama, Alabama's out-of-state student ratio for each freshman class was 27% of the students coming into their freshman class were out-of-state students, paying 2.5 times more than in-state students. By the end of 2016 and three national championships, Alabama's incoming freshman class was 63% out of state, paying 2.5 times more than in-state. So you can imagine, put that on a rolling basis and what that does for the university from a revenue perspective. That's the ROI of sport on institutions. And we're seeing that play out across the universities that are part of our bowl system as well.
Well, now, getting back to the question about your path, why did you choose this kind of social enterprise? Like, well, how come that was so important with you and your whole career to just, you know, make that an element of whatever work you're doing?
Probably my upbringing. You know, my father was an entrepreneur, a businessman, but he was also, I guess now you could call him a social entrepreneur. In my mom's eyes, because he did a lot of things that he didn't charge people for, and she would always, what are you doing? But he always instilled in us the value of being a part of community, of building community, of serving the community in which you live. And so throughout my developmental years and even into my professional life, I've always been engaged, whether it was volunteering, being on boards, serving with other organizations. So this just really fit into my upbringing and what my focus is. I firmly believe that we're all put here to do something. And obviously mine is to help improve the quality of life in the spaces where I work. And this is really important for me, because I believe in building these institutions and creating a platform. Then it also gives opportunity for kids who may not have considered these routes to improve their life and open those doors for them.
Now, when you're working with younger people, how are you kind of instilling that same philosophy of, you know, it's important to make money, it's important to have a career, but it's also important to serve your community and give back?
Well, you know, my message to them is the same message that my father gave me. He would tell us religiously, my brother and I and my sister, there are five of us. But he would tell me as the oldest, because I'm his namesake, he would say, son, the most important thing you have in life is your name. And you will have a name one way or the other. And you want to make that name a name that is respected and valued. And and I believe that is built around not what you get, but what you give. And the more you give, then the more you get out of the communities that you in where you live and where you serve. You don't take anything away from here. You come, you leave with exactly what you brought. So regardless of how much money you make, or how many homes you have, or how much you own, when it's over, you take zero with you. But the most important thing you can take with you is the value of the presence that you left and what that meant to other people. And so service, in my mind, is the most important contribution that one can make.
Yeah, that legacy, the impact that you have on others, that keeps living well after you.
Yes. Ambassador Young told me something when I was considering whether to come to take this position or stay where I was with 100 Black Men, and we had lunch, and he said, you know, John, in everyone's life, well, he first talked to me about reluctant leadership and told me his life story, you know, about we've all heard it before, about how he was pushed into doing things along his life. And to me, I think we all would agree he's one of the greatest servants of our lifetime. But he said, you know, in everyone's life, you will move from success to significance. And the sooner you get there, the more rewarding your life will be. And he was absolutely correct. I am having more fun now than I've had. And I've had a lot of fun in my career, but this one just seems to be the right one at the right time, doing the right thing. And to look into the eyes of young people on the campuses. I was at North Carolina A&T on Thursday, had lunch in their student center with the students, and afterwards sat around in a group of about 20 of them. And we just talked about the goals. And I just allowed them to glean from me what success means. Social entrepreneurship is what we talked about, and the value of being a servant. And you will get more than you ever imagined being a servant leader, more than you ever imagined. And I can attest to that.
Now, are you optimistic? Are you bullish about the future with the young? You see so many young people. Are you excited about what they're going to do, the mark they're going to make?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just as though, you know, we always go through these cycles. Just like people were optimistic about us when we were young. I am extremely optimistic about what they will do. The fact that they have more information available to them at a much younger age. They have a broader view of the world at a much younger age, and that they are more entrepreneuristic than we've ever seen.
Because when we were younger, it was, oh, get a job, get a job, get a job. But now a lot of these younger people are like, well, I'm going to choose myself. I'm going to make my own mark in the world.
And my advice to them is always, and the same advice I give to the people that work with me, you know, my orientation is and has always been, for instance, I work with ESPN. ESPN is my client.
Right, exactly.
You know, I am an entrepreneur.
That's a different mentality that a lot of people have.
I'm an entrepreneur.
That's right.
And my client, you know, engages me as a vendor to provide a service. And so hence the people who work with me, as you notice, I didn't say for me, but with me, are also entrepreneurs. And at any time we don't provide the service that we are engaged to provide, the client has a right to get a new vendor. It's never personal.
Right.
So our obligation is to provide the best service at all times. And that's the message that I constantly give in talks to young people, et cetera. You don't want to look for a job. Jobs are expendable. Being a service agent and providing a world-class service to a client renders you, in my opinion, as a necessity, someone that they
require. You're indispensable.
You're indispensable. That's the word I was looking for.
Now, let's get back to the bowl a little bit. Now, the people who attend the bowl, are they typically the alumni of those different organizations, or you're trying to get everybody in Atlanta to attend this?
That's a very good question. Well, we position this as a conference rivalry. And there are only two Division I conferences for historically black colleges and universities, HBCUs. Again, the Mideastern Athletic Conference and the Southwestern Athletic Conference. So they're champions who are part of the football championship subdivision. Normally, those schools go to the NCAA playoffs. Mm-hmm. Well, they pulled out of going to the playoffs because this is the only bowl game at that level, at the FCS level, that's the Air Force Reserve Celebration Bowl. So they come to this bowl game. And with that being said, we create the rivalry across the conference. So the schools that come are really representing their conference. So by doing so, not only are we just dealing with the two schools that participate, we have
everybody in the conference.
Everyone in the conference rallying around the support for which conference will take home the national championship trophy. And their representative, the champion that year representing the conference, is really representing everyone in their conference.
Now, what are some of the festivities around the event?
Oh, wow. Full bowl week of festivities. We have a welcome, when the teams arrive, we have a on Wednesday, we have a welcome dinner at the Georgia Aquarium. That's a great partner with us. Wonderful event. They get to tour the aquarium as well. On Thursday, we have an event at the college football. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me back up. On Thursday morning, we have a partnership with the NFL where they do some symposiums on careers in the NFL off the field. Mm-hmm. And so the teams get a part of that on Thursday morning. Thursday afternoon, the College Football Hall of Fame, we have something called our Champion Circle, and we partner with the Black College Football Hall of Fame, and we bring in their inductees that will be inducted in February, but this is their first appearance. So these are legendary players that have played at HBCUs that are being inducted into their Hall of Fame in February, but this is their first public appearance. So we have that on Thursday night, along with the teams, et cetera. They get to tour the College Football Hall of Fame, et cetera. On Friday morning, again, the NFL has now expanding the forum. They bring in two students from every school that are as a part of the HBCU network. So they have over about 150 students that they do this careers in the NFL forum with, and they're providing internship opportunities for them on Friday. And then, of course, Saturday is the game. And then finally, one piece that we're doing, going back to our social entrepreneurship, we partnered with the Greek letter organizations, which they lovingly call the Divine Nine, that are the historically African-American Greek organizations. We're doing something called a celebration of service with a focus on, you know, they provide huge and tremendous service they render around the country and around the world. And we're going to use the platform of the Air Force Reserve Celebration Bowl and ABC to feature and highlight that. And one thing that we're doing in Atlanta for around that game and under their leadership is we're having all fans who attend the game to bring non-perishable food. We're going to collect tons of food to donate to Hosea Helps, the organization founded by Hosea Williams. As you know, they do a massive feeding on Christmas Day. And we're in partnership. We're going to donate this food to him because he was Greek. He was a Phi Beta Sigma. And his daughter is also Greek, who runs it today. Miss Omalami is also a Zeta. So highlighting them. And one thing I learned, every mayor since Maynard Jackson of the city of Atlanta has been a member of a Greek letter organization. Every person on the front lines of the civil rights movement, from Dr. King to Andrew Young to John Lewis to Hosea Williams to Jesse Jackson, all of them are members of Greek letter organizations.
It's probably not a coincidence, huh?
Not a coincidence at all. And so with that being said, there are 1.5 million members around the country that are financial. They say there are about four times that many that are non-financial. So you're talking about nearly 5 million people. The goal is to bring as many of those to Atlanta as we can.
Because it's a celebration. Everybody's coming together at this event. And this is a good reason to come to Atlanta and to be part of this.
The economic impact that this will bring to Atlanta, if every organization brought 10,000 people, which is easy, That's 90,000 people converging in Atlanta around this period of time when everything is slow. Mm-hmm. We will fill hotels, going back to our social entrepreneurship and the business impact. And as of right now, our hotel blocks are pretty much sold out in every hotel that we have room blocks in.
Wow.
So they're coming, and this is the first time in the more than one century existence of these organizations where their members have all come together in
right.
one
all
place.
All of them in one place.
That's correct.
And that's what this the goal of this bowl is, right?
Is it
to
is.
Give them a reason to all come together in one place.
In one place, and for us to highlight the work that they do around the country and around the world.
And they're getting highlighted nationally with the all of the coverage on what's on ABC.
Mm-hmm. Social entrepreneurship at its best. I like that. You're going to hear me wear that one out.
So now for you, what is going to be something that happens that you'll be high-fiving your team after the event?
Well, for us and what we do is we want our first priority is to make sure that we're putting on a world-class experience for the players and the teams. They play all year long to get an opportunity to go to this bowl game at this level. So ESPN engages me to make sure that we put on a world-class experience for them first. Mm-hmm. Secondly, that it's a great experience for the fans. And Mercedes-Benz Stadium helps us a lot.
Exactly.
It's a great venue for that. And the third component of that is what difference does this bowl game, does it make in the community? So when we put those three components together as a part of our strategy, we'll be high-fiving very well by creating that world-class experience for the teams, making sure that the fans who come leave saying, wow, Atlanta's a great city, the Air Force Reserve Celebration Bowl is a first-class event, and it's something we're going to come to next year. And third, that the impact of what we're doing with the Celebration of Service and the partnerships that we have, and we still partner with 100 Black Men for community initiatives that they do around this game as well. When we put all those three together, we'll be high-fiving because the impact that it will make on the city, both from a social, from a cultural, and from an economic point of view, will be lasting.
Well, congratulations on this adventure you're on now, this new path, a slight, what do they call it in the startup world, a slight pivot from where you were. Mm-hmm. But it seems like you're on the same track to make as big of an impact as you possibly can with as many people as you can.
Thank you so much for that and you know, just keep wishing us luck.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more to get tickets, are there still tickets available?
There are tickets available. You can visit us at www.thecelebrationbowl.com. That's www.thecelebrationbowl.com.
Right, you have to put the in front of it.
You do.
All right, John Grant, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, it's going to be a tough act to follow. We got Mo Bunnell with Bunnell Idea Group. Welcome.
Hey, thanks.
You're here to talk about your new book. Tell us about it.
I'm excited, and I'm a big fan of John. It's fun. When we met here in the lobby, he had gone through our training a couple years ago. So the new book encapsulates what was typically 3 days of intense training around business development. How does somebody grow their business in a way that they can feel authentic and great about, and it's proactive? The book's called The Snowball System, and we've sort of packed all that 3 days of what used to be super interactive training, which it still is, but now somebody can access it in book form.
So now, it's the word sales is sometimes kind of a word that some people are uncomfortable with, and organizations kind of don't lean into it as well. Sometimes they call it business development. They're, you know, they're going out of their way to you know, deal with selling. But nobody eats until somebody sells something, right?
That's right.
So how do you kind of, just from a branding standpoint, how do you move the perception of sales away from this kind of negative stigma that some people have?
You nailed it. So one of the sort of one-sentence taglines we've got in the book is that we're going to teach people how to sell themselves without selling their soul, which, you know...
Is that their fear, that they're selling their soul or that they're, you know, manipulating? Like, why is there such a negative connotation to selling?
Yeah, I think we all have these ideas in our head or these stories of when we were manipulated, when people did cheesy things like you've only got 1 hour to say yes or no or whatever. And what we teach is the exact opposite, that similar to what John said, that you give first, that selling isn't selling in the cheesy manipulative way. It's being strategically helpful to somebody that needs your help but doesn't realize it yet.
Mm-hmm. And then, so when you're working on your system, did you develop this from scratch? Like, was this based on scar tissue? Like, how did this come about?
That's a great way to say it. I love that. Yeah, I was an expert and was actually an actuary, a fellow of the Society of Actuaries, which you can't get much geekier than being an actuary, right? We're the
usually that's where you go for salespeople, right?
Yeah,
to that department.
Yeah. You want to go to the actuaries, the people who want to be accountants but didn't have a personality. So. No, but I loved being an actuary. And I loved the deep technical craft. And it takes about a decade to get through all the actuarial exams, and I passed all those. And literally the next month, I moved into a broader business development role at the consulting firm I was at. And completely scared to death. I had no idea what I was getting into. And I asked my boss for the playbook. You know, hey, I'm used to studying. Where's the book?
Right, give me that checklist, yeah. The selling checklist.
Yeah, give me the selling checklist, right? And he slapped me on the back and said, good luck. There's no book. I think my training was him saying, treat the client right.
Well, and that's good advice.
Yeah, I got three words. He was great at it. But I was lucky to have some mentors. And to your point, scar tissue, scared to death because my bonus had gone from client delivery and billable hours and what clients thought of my work and things like
that. Because the work was already sold in. You were just kind of serving the client once it was sold in.
You nailed it.
And now you're wearing the hat of, I got to find the client right from scratch, like from strangers.
Exactly. And growing the clients, if we had a sliver of work or what we called slice business or whatever with someone, I had to grow it. So my bonus went from service to growth.
Right.
Didn't know how to do it. So I started reading books and digging into peer review research. And now over 130 behavioral science studies are the underpinnings of the system that people get in the book.
So you get to use your actuarial brain that likes systems and science and math.
Yes.
And then you get to use your charm and wit to kind of marry those two together to create a selling system?
You got it. So the actuarial science part of my brain, the left brain, sort of created the steps and the science. And I think it was growing up in a town of 80 people in Indiana, no joke, that mm-hmm. gave me the right part. The treat your neighbor right, because not only did you grow up next to them, but your parents did and your grandparents did right. and your great-grandparents did. And long-term relationships, if we put air quotes around that, wasn't like 2 years. It was 100
years. Right, it
was
generations. Right?
Yeah. You treated the neighbor right because you were right. going to be living next to him, not in 10 years, but right. your kids were going to. So I think that long-term relationship and being helful, like John talked about, was the underpinning of the system with science bolted onto it.
So now walk me through the system. How much can you reveal, or I got to buy the book to get the whole
system? I'll tell you anything you want to know. Anything you want to know.
So where does it start? Does it start from prospecting all the way to closing? Like what area do you focus on?
It does. So the whole book's comprehensive. You can sort of break it down into three buckets. How do you manage your opportunities? How do you manage your relationships? And how do you manage yourself? So the opportunity part is sort of what you talked about. It's a pipeline. It's how do I uncover a need and orchestrate a beautiful buying process that somebody wants to take every step along with us. The relationship side is seven steps to go from somebody you want to meet but haven't all the way to their providing referrals for you. We call that a raving fan. And the manage yourself part is most people who do selling have some hybrid role these days. They've got one foot in delivery too. They've got to stick around to make sure the work was done right and have a long-term relationship. So the manage yourself part is to not just bias to all the delivery side, but also be trying to find the next prospect.
So now is your system, when you're working with clients, do you recommend that they divide those up, or you're okay with this kind of blended?
Most of our clients have a blended role. These days, we call it in the book the seller expert. The seller part is even people that are full-time salespeople are having to add expertise, because the old days of smile and dial in the morning and golf in the afternoon are gone. People don't want to be around people that aren't adding value. They don't have an expertise. So full-time salespeople are having to have a hybrid role and add the expertise. But here's the big clincher. Experts are having to learn to sell. So if you're a lawyer or consultant
right.
or accountant.
We get those all the time. I can't tell you how many lawyers, you know, and CPAs come in here, and their whole mindset of growing up was they wouldn't have to sell,
right.
that they would just execute the work.
Right.
And then all of a sudden now they get to the real world and they're like, guess what? Where's your book of business? This like freaks them out. This is well out of their comfort zone for
exactly.
a lot of them.
Yeah, you used to be able to make partner by doing great work. No more. Those rules
That's
are
gone.
Gone.
Right?
Now you have to do great work and bring in business.
But how do you move a person who just mentally is, can you, does this work for everybody? Because selling to me, there is, you have to have some empathy and personality and really understand the other person's pains and needs in order to help fulfill them and serve them. But some people are wired to me like, you know, this is what I'm heads down. I'm just doing the math. You know,
right.
That's what I do.
Right. Well, there's some interesting research here. Dr. Anders Ericsson out of Florida State is the worldwide expert on expertise. That's a pretty cool gig.
Yeah.
He's the expert on expertise. And what he's found 100% of the time is that if somebody is good at a complex skill, they learned it and they earned it. So you can be good at being born with blue eyes or being 6'2" or whatever, but anything that's complex was earned. And that's the same with sales or business development, where let's say there's a 100-piece puzzle of all the different skills you need for business development. Well, one person might naturally be great at empathy, like you're saying. But a different person, maybe they're not good at empathy, but maybe they're good at never giving up. A different person may be good at digging in and learning a new skill, like business development. So no matter who walks into the idea of the role of business development, they might have one or two or three or four of the 100-piece puzzle, but because the skill has so complex, it has its own expertise in itself, no one has it all. And the good news about that is that no one is magically just great at business development. They learned it over time, and that means the great news is anybody can get better than where they're at.
So salesmen aren't born.
Salesmen are not born. It's a complete myth.
So you have data that supports that you can take anybody in this room, like even John.
It was very difficult with John. It was very difficult.
Somehow make him have an ability to sell.
He's incredibly good at serving others. You know, there's a whole chapter in the book we call using the give to get model, where you give first.
Is that that's a good? Is that a tactic or is that a core foundation?
It's a core foundation. And I was nodding so much when John was talking about what his father taught him. And the exact quote I wrote down from John, the more you give, the more you get. It's so funny that we've got a whole chapter in the book called Give to Get. But so many salespeople are experts. They withhold the giving. They say, well, I can't give until I'm hired. No, we can teach that skill. We want to design a 1 or 2 hour investment of time, not days or weeks or months, but 1 or 2 hours where somebody can give their expertise, someone falls in love with it, and they want to hire them.
So now this serve first mentality, again, that's counter to what a lot of these stereotype salespeople are. It's all about me, 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 me. But when you're serving first, it isn't about me, it's about you. What can I do to help you be
exactly.
successful?
Exactly.
And there's been, you know, old school, you know, sales books that are tell you the more successful you make your clients, the more successful you're going to be.
Exactly.
So you're saying that that holds true even today.
It definitely does. And the behavioral science backs it up. Dr. Robert Cialdini out of Arizona State synthesized all the levers of influence that the human mind seems to have. These are mental heuristics or shortcuts that we are all influenced by. And the give to get model, just as one example, is the only technique I've ever seen that hits every single one of the six. So when you're giving first, it's highly likely that if there is an opportunity, that person is going to hire you if you give in the right way and you give first.
And then when you're working with your clients, how do you help them and coach them to give in the right way?
Bingo. Well, a lot of times you want to find the sweet spot between not giving enough and giving too much. That's just the thing to start with. A lot of our experts that we work with, they're so nice that when they first learn the model, they actually give away too much. Say I give a week's worth of work. Well, I actually solved the problem the person can hire me for. So I want to give, say, 1 or 2 hours away where we get started. It's very valuable to the prospect to receive that information or the diagnosis or the audit or the whiteboarding session, whatever it is. But it also isn't enough that it solved the whole problem. So the likely outcome of that is them saying, hey, what would it look like to finish this up?
Right. So then you really have to kind of reverse engineer the whole process so that you know where that line is to draw.
That's exactly right. We call it designing a great buying experience. So, and that's all in the book. So if you think of four steps, we want to think ahead. What's the meaty, profitable, big work we want this prospect to hire us for in a year? Back up from that and think, what's an easy to say yes to paid piece of work that would lead to that? Mm-hmm. Back up a step from that and think, what's the first 2 hours we can give away that we'll do on our dime for the right prospect, not for anybody?
Right.
We want to make that very special. And then pull back from that. Step one is, how do I describe that and offer it so I get a yes? And then execute it forward. I've got an introductory meeting, a little give-to-get workshop, what we call a small project, or some of our clients call it a paid selling effort, something that would be paid for but lead to the fourth, which is really big, huge, meaty work.
Now, let's go back to John, since he's here, about his challenges with sponsors. That's probably that's an issue for you, John, right?
It's an opportunity for
me. It's an opportunity for you. So that's a complex sale. There's a lot of people, and that's an easy no when you're dealing with something that large, right, or a sponsorship. It's easy for a company to say no to it because they're being asked a lot.
Well, my philosophy is, a no is simply a yes that has yet to be understood.
It's a not. So not yet.
That's correct. It is a not yet. So I love what I'm hearing.
Right.
Here.
So now, how would you help him kind of move the ball and sell more sponsorship?
Right. So what we might do is start with the targeting criteria. So that's in the book, a very robust method of saying, how am I going to prioritize who I'm going to go after. You can think of an actuarial scientist.
Okay, so like a dream list.
Yeah.
Of like who would be the perfect sponsor.
Right. And that's really important because it's easy for seller experts to only respond to the emails or the incoming calls that they get. Well, those might be good prospects. They might not. If somebody shows up on our doorstep and they want to hire us, we can say yes to that. But we want to proactively make our outbound efforts.
And strategically.
Yeah, and right, exactly. Right. So step one would be creating a list of who do we want to go after.
And then, again, this is a myth that a lot of people think of. Oh, I need a million people.
Nope.
You might need five.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
Your list
exactly
would be
right.
Five.
Exactly right.
And then you just hone in on that. But one thing is you thinking they're a good fit, but you don't know what's going on in their world to know for sure. That's a hypothesis, right?
Exactly. So we're not going to get a yes every time, but we're going to, you know, just thinking through what John talked about before about the special nature of the bowl and the kind of people that are watching it and engaged in it and going to the activities and all the things that even like feeding the homeless, all those things. These are assets that John has to be able to move somebody else's agenda forward. And he can go through a system to figure out who might want that and then make, we've got a whole chapter on lead generation, 9 methods there that use value to get in the door the first time and just have the first conversation. So we're going to use science to help us get in the door. And from there, it's listening and finding out what their priorities are and what their goals are, and then trying to figure out what are all the assets we've got with the bowl in the whole engagement of the entire experience. What can he give away to prompt demand for those folks being sponsors this year or maybe next year?
Now, how does he combat like some of these, we call them in here, cosmetics, where they go, well, there's only going to be 50,000 people there. I need a bowl that has 100,000 people. Like some things that they sound like they matter. Like, you know, you can measure a lot of things nowadays, but mm-hmm. some things maybe not worth measuring as much as other things. Like, how do you discern the difference there?
Well, and it's also finding fit. So he might go to somebody that says, I don't want to place an ad because you've only got 50,000 people there. But maybe they've got a social effort that you could link with them in a line for the Feed the Hungry thing mm-hmm. on Christmas Day or something like that. So we're just in the beginning, we're trying to find anything between our organizations. Because again, these are high priority targets. These are the people we want to establish a long-term, multi-decade relationship with. So in the beginning, it's about finding anything that's sticky to start to build this relationship and do things together. And then we found from that, things roll downhill.
And then when you have that relationship first mentality mm-hmm. is different than this, again, the going back to the negative stigma of selling, of this transactional, just burn and churn, I'm going to get somebody and I don't care, you know, they're in a pile, like the typical gym membership, like,
right.
I just want to hire you, I don't care if you ever show up here again,
right.
I just got to convince you to spend the money today.
Exactly. The whole reason we named the book The Snowball System is that because of this giving first mindset and very strategically spending our time to be helpful to others, what happens is you start to roll downhill. The snowball starts rolling downhill, where after you get going, you almost couldn't stop your own momentum if you tried, mm-hmm. because you've got all these people in your ecosystem trying to help you. It's not just you anymore. It's these people who love you and love what they're doing, and they're seeking out ways to help you.
So you can, by implementing this, you can be strategically helping yourself get more referrals by becoming more referable, by serving more people that want to help you, that makes more referrals happen. And those referrals, I would think, would be more chance to be the right person because of all this service you're doing to the right people.
That's exactly right. And like John said, while you're at the center of it, it's only because you have the ability and desire and history to help others that people are running back to you. In this case, I happen to know John, and he's gone through our class, and I was so we partnered with King & Spalding, EY, Jackson Spalding, and Boston Consulting Group, and then Bundle Idea Group, us, of course, and we taught the 15 largest nonprofits in town with their CEO, John was at the time, and then their chief development officer. So you had to have the CEO and CDO in that room or you couldn't come. And we had these 30 people that were incredible. And through that 3-day experience with John, I found that he was finding ways to help these other nonprofit CEOs in the room. He was finding ways to spread the word of, at the time, 100 Black Men. And I still remember him to this day because he had that giving first mindset. So how cool was it? I saw him. It was years ago. And I've instantaneously got this good feeling about him, and I want to help him in his new initiative.
Right.
John is the role model of person that has executed a system like this.
And that shows you the impact a person can have, even if he wasn't aware of the impact he had on you.
I still remember John Grant today.
So now if somebody wanted to get their hands on this book, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, so two great methods to move forward. One is they can go to snowballsystem.com, and that will link them to every major bookseller in the world. There's audiobooks that I personally recorded over 6.5 days in a studio like this. Kindle, it's in every major bookstore around the country, and snowballsystem.com will lead you to that. The other thing people might want to do is if they go to createdemandcourse.com, they can get a free 8-part series on how they can use the system to create demand for their own services. And that you don't even have to buy the book for. It's free. So createdemandcourse.com gives you basically free video training that helps you implement these types of skills.
Good stuff. Well, Mo, thank you so much for sharing your story, and keep us posted on how the progress of the book is going.
It's exciting. Thank you.
Well, this is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.